Hi, Sabrina George, still interviewing Adam Bloom, part two for New Comedy Radio. So when you're preparing for something like an hour's show of your own in for somewhere like Edinburgh, what's the difference?
The difference is that has a beginning, middle and an end, and will be done in the same order each night, as opposed to a 20-minute set, which will be in any order I feel, and won't be necessarily material I did the night before, because I'm, you know, going with my mood. If you're doing an Edinburgh show, it's expected to be different to your last Edinburgh show, so you can't just dip into old stuff. The people who paid money to see a new show with a new poster, then you're sitting there thinking, I've seen all this before. So in a club, you're just doing a set, which is up to you what you do. And if someone comes up and says, I've seen that before, you think, oh, that's a shame. I might have done something different tonight, had I known you were going to be there. So it's best to rotate your newer stuff, but it's still a rotation in your brain of your records that you're pulling out. I think that when I do an Edinburgh show, I will still be improvising in and out of the material, so it's choosing when to go in and how to go in and out. You're still keeping yourself in the moment by thinking on your feet. But I won't be jumbling around so much. If something later on in the show gets brought up by the audience as a subject matter earlier, I will do that material and then weave in and out and remember to structure it somehow to link the other two bits to make it seamless. I mean, I've seen comedians get heckled about a subject and they go, oh, I'm going to talk about that later on. And talk about it now and don't tell them you were going to talk about it. I've got a joke that I wrote that I'm going to say in 15 and a half minutes. Well, now 60 minutes now that you've heckled me and put me off set. You know, make it look as chatty as possible.
Well, I was going to say, I think your style is the apparent being in the moment, apparently thinking it up in the moment, and almost like a conversation you've had with someone in the bar, but it's like wittier and more structured. But to me, that illusion with a lot of comics is really important. When someone breaks that illusion, like Milton Jones, again, getting back to him, if he broke that illusion, nobody would be that surprised, because it's a different structure.
There's one thing I'd say on that. I don't do fake improv in the sense of going, oh, where am I going with this, and then falling into the material. I think jokes that are funny should stand on their own as, here's something funny I've got to tell you. I just don't emphasise the fact that I've said it before. But I still think some of my stuff is heavily convoluted, and clearly it wouldn't have been thought of on the spot because of the amount of twist, turn, this bit, that bit, ties in with that bit, clearly had some thought put into it. But I at least want to look like, this is the first time I've said this heavily thought out idea I've got. Right? So it's not so much, I'm just making up as I go along, but it's, here's something I've brought to you. In comedy, if I had to choose it, was when a comedian says, certainly one of my least favourite things, when a comedian says at the end of a routine, I was doing this story in Wales last night and someone said this and I said this. To get one extra gag out, you just reminded the audience that they are not special to you. It's like a woman in bed turning around and saying, oh, this is my ex-boyfriend's favourite position. I know you've got had other partners, I just don't want to be reminded
of
the moment of having sex with you. So yeah. But I don't fake spontaneity to the point of trying to make up the material isn't material. I just don't emphasise it. I don't use words like material. I said this the other day and this happened. But I still think a joke should stand up on its own. I wouldn't. One comedian who I think is very good but annoys me because he'll often at the end of a gag turn, look backstage and go, oh, write that down. I think you wrote that down before you said it, you idiot.
Probably a year ago.
Well, yeah, but I think that's slightly cheating because it's almost going, trying to get credit for something being a genuine ad lib when it's a joke. And you might go, what's the difference? It's still part of the illusion. I think there's a slight line of taste when you, for example, if the person's seen you before, they're going to sit there going, you liar. Whereas with my stuff, although they might go, oh, I thought you just made that up. I haven't claimed I made it up. I'm just looking chatty and friendly because that's part of the illusion of showbiz and showbiz of stand-up. If it's in the style of a chatty person.
So people like Dorothy Parker or Oscar Wilde, we know now that they would spend ages coming up with those fantastic little bon mots which have gone down in history as fantastic moments of wit, but they probably spent a lot of time crafting them, but they didn't say, this is one I wrote last year which I now think is appropriate that I should drop into the conversation. Please write, you know. And it's like, you know, that's what I love about some of the really great comics, is they can do stuff which maybe they've been doing forever, but it will come out as completely fresh. And as long as they don't drop the ball and say, you know, make some comment.
Oh, where was I? There's another one.
Yes. Well, when they die, that's new material. That's another one. It's about keeping up that. And what's marvellous about that is if you genuinely do come come up with something in the moment, which, and you're going, fucking hell, that was brilliant. You can then store that as well, but you don't have to go, God, that was clever, I just thought that. It's a, again, some comics don't, some comics are very clearly scripted and are very clearly writing tightly crafted material, but others have done that, but the audience loves the game.
Yes, that's a very good point. I do contradict my theory occasionally in one with one technique, and that is if I do a particularly good ad lib that doesn't completely get the roaring laugh, it gets a big laugh but not a roaring laugh, I might look at someone in the front row, if I know it's a really good line, and I know that although the audience didn't roar it, there's an undercurrent of, well, that was a really good line, and it must have been an ad lib because it was on the back of what they said in the audience, I might look at someone in the front row and go, just thought that, quite chuffed, right? Now that's really cocky, and it also undermines my theory, because it contradicts my theory, because if you emphasise you just thought of that, that indirectly suggests you didn't just think of the other stuff, so that does actually slightly break the illusion I'm talking about. However, I've also said that I'm admitting, I don't mind admitting they are jokes that I've prepared for you, just not that I've said before, so that actually doesn't completely break it, but it does draw attention to the fact that it's not spontaneous. However, the roar I get on that moment is inevitably huge, because I've forced the audience to come into that moment with me and go, look, this is a thought that happened in front of your eyes there about that, because I think you can get so hypnotised by the comedian that you actually forget the important material, because you forget that he's just said something on the back of the heckle. So you know, it just becomes this fluent thing of watching a comedian being funny, funny, funny. So what can look spontaneous when it's actually material can also be the other way round, because they're so used to watching someone telling jokes, someone says something funny, and also the prepared heckle put-downs have become quite known to the public. So when you do something that's in the moment, it can almost be undercredited because they're so used to hearing heckle put-downs. A woman singing at a nightclub, and she sets up some of the sound problems. She commented on it. She went, "Yes, I am singing live, by the way." And it slapped me in the face. Wow! You're talking to me about what's happening now in the moment. Wasn't a bad thing. If you had how many people mind the records.
Well, look, the other thing, again, talking about heckles and heckle put downs, is one of my bete noirs, even though I know a lot of comics would disagree with me, is that the more if I ever use other people's heckle put downs, I am jumping into their persona rather than mine. Because the more I give myself permission to maybe do a crap heckle put down, but maybe do a brilliant one, the more I stay in my persona and the more I build that up.
Unless the heckle put down completely suits what you do. But I'm not a big fan of heckle put downs other than ones you thought of yourself.
Yes.
There's one I've used, which is if someone's relentlessly heckling me and it gets a bit tedious, I go, I'd love to chat, I'm working. And that's an old line. But there are lines I've written that have been used. It's not like an unwritten rule that heckle put downs are a melting pot of, you know. And I once got annoyed when something I thought of got started to get used, and I thought, well, what have I got if I've used one? Because any heckle put down that's standard once wasn't standard, you know, someone thought of it.
But it's something I always find jars slightly when I see particularly MCs who are more likely to do it than anybody else. When they do the generic heckle put downs, it's just like they've moved out of themselves.
Sure, fair enough. Yes, certainly. If it doesn't suit them.
Yeah. And they're just using the standard one. Which goes on to the next subject, which is like, you know, using other people's material or using material that's in the public domain. What are your thoughts and feelings about that?
Utterly. And despisable.
Despicable.
Despicable and despisable. Is there such a word as despisable?
There is now.
There is, isn't there?
I don't know.
To despise something?
I don't know. There is.
If something is able to be despised, mind you, anything's despisable.
Because I would rather see a comic not doing well but really working at being themselves,
yeah,
and
sure,
developing their own thing than someone doing brilliantly using someone else's.
Yeah, no doubt at all. The one thing that. Generally, you can't steal the waffly ramblings of a comedian, because you can only really work from him. sort of lost idiot savant kind of, you know, clowny kind of bloke who doesn't understand the world. But still, you could steal most of his stuff and isolate it.
On some level would be funny.
Yes.
Yeah, but not as well as he does.
No.
So what happens if someone steals any material of yours, or what has happened?
I've never met them. It's happened a couple of times, but I've never met that person because they work on a different circuit, which is the mainship circuit, where it's acceptable to steal material. But what these talentless idiots don't understand is that it may be acceptable to steal material, but only in the world where people steal material. In the world I live in the actual society I live in, if you steal someone's possession, you go to prison. So, if you live in a world where there's no such thing as ownership, then go and take someone's stereo because they're going to take yours the next day. But you can't do it if there are rules in your society. And if only there was a prison that you could put mainstream comics in for stealing
there
our material.
One. There are certain places that do it. So getting back to doing the hours show, when you're starting to set out to do that, what do you do?
Well, it's normally a collection of the material I've organically grown that year by walking down the street or improvising on stage, and then I start to place it in a structure of stuff I think sets up at the beginning to set up my persona to an audience who doesn't know me, then longer bits, and then bits that tie in later on with other bits, and then a conclusion.
So would there be material in an hour's show that you would do in an hour's show that you would not do in a club?
I wouldn't. There's material in an hour's show I wouldn't do in a 20-minute set, but there's not really any material I wouldn't do in a longer 40-minute set, provided I had a very attentive audience. I've done Jongers in Southampton. It's, I think, a fantastic club. And I remember trying out a big chunk of a story about a story that had children, twins born prematurely that may not live. That's a true story. And I managed to get the whole story out, completely attentive audience, big punchline at the end, and a big roar from people out on birthday parties and stag nights and hen nights. And I thought to myself, if I can make this quite long, not as many laughs per minute as the rest of my stuff, story work on a Saturday night in a club where they've come out for a disco as well, that's a very good sign that I'm actually not going to disappear my own arse and doing stuff that only the Edinburgh Festival crowd who know how to do would actually understand. And so some people say, oh, I couldn't do my Edinburgh stuff in a club, but I think it's a very good test to be able to do your Edinburgh stuff in a club. Not necessarily all of it. Some bits might just completely require an audience to give themselves to you 100%, but I still think it's a really good test to do Edinburgh material in a club. I really think it is.
Right, but some comics would say that they feel they can do storytelling in an hour's show, which they couldn't do in a club.
Yes, so do I.
Right.
But in a good night in a club, it's a really good thing. We're talking about headlining Jongers where you do half an hour. So we're talking about the last 3 minutes of a 30-minute set, sticking that story in. And we're back to the bad work and blame these tools. Of course there's a setting for a story. And of course there's a certain type of material that asks the audience. You know, there are certain subjects, certain topics, unless it's on the punchline where it just shocks the audience, there are certain topics like paedophilia. You can have a punchline paedophile, but a setup with paedophile is a very different thing. So if you start going into that subject, you're going to have people on birthday parties going, oh, get off, of course you can. And that's, I accept that can happen. All I'm saying is, if you can really, really manipulate any audience on a good night into your world completely, you can do what you want with them. And you know, I've heard of the most obscure left field comedians absolutely storming the pants off Jongers Camden as an open spot and being hard to follow because they're so different. And like, oh, you've got to do knob jokes, you've got to do. No, you haven't. You've got to have conviction in what you do and be skilled enough to make your audience go with you. So I'm really bored of comedians blaming the audience or saying I can't do that there. I do accept that the story I made work at Southampton Jongers wouldn't work at 9 out of 10 Jongers nights I play. That's why I didn't do them at the other night. But I stuck it in when I felt it was right, and it was right, and it was really right. And I think it's really insulting to the people who are normal people sitting in that audience to say, oh, they wouldn't get it. Well, no, that you didn't make them get it. Yes, most nights I wouldn't do that material because I don't think it would work for certain reasons. Because of the criteria of their ego, they've come out going, come on, tell me again, tell me a funny story. What? Cot death? What are you talking about? It's my birthday. Do you know what I mean? I can understand that, and that's acceptable. You can't hate the person for thinking like that. Hate yourself for choosing to do that story on the wrong night, or hate yourself for not being strong enough in what you do to get them into your world. sort of running in the air like in a cartoon, about to either drop or invent some kind of weird flying machine to win the Racky Breaks.
So going into acting or writing a sketch show or...
Well, I've had 3 radio series in the last 3 years and therefore got used to the idea of being funny at a desk on tap. So that's a new skill I've developed. It's a case of driving myself to do it without a deadline or permission to write something else on my own back. Big difference, isn't there, having no deadlines make people work. If you've got a commission and a contract, you better get something done. It's very embarrassing having to give the money back to somebody and ask your agent for a 10% commission from the VAT on that to go back into that person's bank account. So, yeah, those kind of awkward thoughts put me under pressure to work.
Would you like to do more of that?
Yeah, but I'd like to do something on my own back. With The Office as a pilot that he made himself because he knew the script would never look good.
Stand on its own.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, although the kind of thing I'd write wouldn't be as subtle as The Office and therefore wouldn't be able to work on paper, I still like the idea of showing something what you've got. You know, I don't like having my ideas put in somebody else's hands who I choose and therefore risking getting messed up and dragged apart and ripped up. You know, I've had similar things happen to me. Savvy, you watch a year's work just start to be watered down. Woody Allen said the best anything gets is an idea. Ricky Gervais said that to me once when I interviewed him, and an incredible man to interview. And that's a great quote by Woody Allen. I know it's not his words, it's Woody Allen's words. The best anything gets is an idea. And then, which is why stand-up's a great thing, because the idea is just set. You know, no budget. You can't go, I can afford the joke I wanted. You just, you know, you say it. I love that. I love the fact that understand the context of the idea. You know, it's all you. It's probably why Woody Allen ended up directing, because he knew that the idea came from him and therefore would be League of Gentlemen. They would write and form their ideas. And it doesn't surprise me that they created what I think is the best sketch show ever, because they actually wrote it and performed it.
So that's where you'd like to go in the future?
I'd like to write a sitcom. I'm a bit daunted by the fact that my things that make me funny are led by my persona. Now I'd have to come in and a personality saying something that they would say in that situation. George in Seinfeld is one of my favourite characters ever, and he's not saying witty things, is he? He's saying things that are inappropriate.
That only he would say. So what about, would you carry on doing clubs for as long as you could?
Yeah. Shows if I wanted to, but I still quite like the atmosphere in a club. I quite like the challenge of following somebody. When you do Edinburgh for a month, you're going on cold to an audience who've come to see you, and it's a very free and low pressure feeling. And although it's harder to do an hour than 20 minutes for obvious reasons, it's higher pressure going on straight after somebody. My first gig back from Edinburgh is never enjoyable, because suddenly I'm on after somebody in an atmosphere that's not set up how I necessarily want it. And you know, you've got to deal with what you're given suddenly. You don't know how it's going to be. You know, suddenly that before you just pulls their pants down on stage, underpants if you're listening to the States. Yin-yin-yow if you're listening to Korea. I don't know what yin-yin-yow means. If that's something rude, I apologise. You know, I'm trying to say pants, that's slightly rude. But yeah, so, you know, suddenly you've got to improvise around what's the atmosphere you're brought onto. Who are clapping and waiting for you to talk, it's going to be the same every night at the beginning. So I think that I will always get a kick out playing clubs. I think some big comics are terrified of clubs now because they're used to playing on their own terms, and they suddenly go, oh my god, and the expectation's higher when they're following the unknown comic, and everyone goes, here comes the famous comic, go on then, go. I'm good for a while, I'm used to doing theatres, and suddenly they're not so good, and they make an excuse and they do a short set and they leave and they then do clubs again. So I wouldn't want to be that comic, because I think that the circuit really keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, and you particularly do thrive on adrenaline.
Yes, I like being under pressure.
You love that energy, yeah.
Never be bored when you're under I've been late in a hurry to get somewhere. I'm never late. Looking like I'm going to be late, but getting there on time, that's my favourite thing. Because you're not bored and you're not letting anyone down.
So are you writing your sitcom now?
I wrote the first draft, wasn't really happy with it, and it's now stuck in nowhere land. So I'm not, no.
So you don't sit down at 8 o'clock in the typewriter in the morning and start writing,
no,
whatever it is?
No, not on commission. Oh, on a commission I do. With right. A radio series, I do 5 hours a day, 5 days a week for 9 months, and end up with 2.5 hours of material, which I would never, ever, ever achieve as a stand-up, because I don't have that self-motivation deadline kind of creating pressure that I put on myself.
Passionate people about comedy. I mean, you go and watch other people a lot as well, don't you?
Not much, to be honest, but I watch people when I'm on the bill with them. I certainly don't do my gig and disappear. I watch other people, but
you went to the Gong Show.
I went to the Gong Show, that's true, but I did turn around to my girlfriend at the time and say, God, I haven't gone to a night out of comedy. I haven't been on the bill for a while, in all fairness. See a good comedian and go, damn, that's one more person that gets in the way of my career, and I don't do that. I go, that's one more person I can enjoy. So thank God I don't have that competitive side. I've got a competitive side when I'm on the bill with someone good, but I haven't got a competitive side when I'm watching them when I've already been on. I'm not worried about someone going on and being funny after me. I'm worried about not going on and being as funny as the person before me. Big difference.
Yeah, but that's not the person, that's the comedy.
Sure, but there are some comedians who don't even get excited by hearing there's someone new good. When I saw that Thomas guy from Finland, I went home excited. And some people come up to that thing like that. They almost feel threatened by that person's existence.
Brilliant. Well, thanks a lot for that, hon. That's grand.
Pleasure.